This is Sarah and Courtney, and you're listening to Say It Southern. Aspiring to live not just as moms, but as modern Southern women, we began this project to hear from those who inspire us and recognize those who are achieving their own personal goals. Listen in as we celebrate the South and those who say it Southern. Where there's a whisk, there's a way. Today we're talking with Gigi Butler of the world-famous Gigi's Cupcakes, and I'm here to tell you, this may be my favorite podcast we've done. It is such a story to celebrate, one of grit, hard work, risk, reward. There's no doubt in my mind you'll do some serious soul-searching of your own after being inspired by her journey to success. Join us now as we say it Southern with the sweetest, Gigi Butler. Today we're talking with Gigi Butler, the Gigi of Gigi's Cupcakes. That's right. I mean, I'm kind of having a little like starstruck moment right now.
Well, yeah, because she's sweet and
and I put my face in how many Gigi's Cupcakes.
Exactly.
So anyway, Gigi, we're so excited to have you on and cannot wait to hear your story and all the things.
Well, thank you for having me. It's so nice to be in an all women's podcasts of business women and Southern women.
Yes, exactly.
Southern power.
That's right. Speaking of Southern power, you've got it. So I have to tell you, I went back and I listened to some of your TED Talk and I kind of know your story. I mean, I remember buying my first box of Gigi's Cupcakes when I lived in Nashville and in Franklin. And it was such... I remember that craze.
Yeah,
don't
and
you?
It was the new thing.
Yeah.
The gourmet type cupcakes is what you do.
Yeah. And we were just like, this is a whole new way.
Cupcakes
of,
to the next level.
That's way to do it.
Future.
Yeah, you were. You were on that cutting edge.
Well, there was one other company as well, but it was just the right timing, and Nashville is so... It's such a foodie town. 11 years ago, it was really starting to be up and coming and cool and Southern. And so it was just, you know, just a series of hard work and God and really good timing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's start at the beginning because everybody has to tell, I mean, you have to tell everybody this story because it's just unbelievable. So take us back to your girl with a dream in Oklahoma.
Okay, well, and I'll do it in a very quick way. I was born in Oklahoma, and then I was raised on a farm in the desert, high desert in California. And at 7, I wanted to be a country music singer-songwriter. And I told my parents I was going to go to Nashville one day, and they looked at me like, okay, go for it. So I was a serial entrepreneur. My dad was an entrepreneur. We had a Potbelly Pig business, a hair salon, video arcades, restaurants, and he always taught us not to fear. And I think that I was just raised with, well, if you fall, you fall, and you just get back up, and God has your back, and family's here for you. So at 15, I started a cleaning company called Gigi's Cleaning Company, and cleaned, did lots of construction work, lots of commercial work, and then I wanted to move to Nashville. I had $500 to my name after I paid my bills off. I knew no one, didn't have a job, didn't have a place to live, but I knew I had to take the leap. So I moved here and started waiting tables and then built up my cleaning business and really started working on my art of music. And there's so many people that come to Nashville to sing and write. I think probably 90% of the people that live in Nashville are. Mm-hmm. And at the age of 30, I was cleaning Taylor Swift's house and was cleaning her bathroom. And, you know, she started playing Teardrops on my guitar on her bed. And I was like, I'm done.
What? Okay, crazy. Wait a second. So you're cleaning Taylor Swift's
house.
And she's 15 at the time?
Her first album was about to come out. And so I cleaned her parents, you know, she lived with her family still then in Hendersonville. And I literally was cleaning her toilet. She was on her bed practicing guitar and she started singing Teardrops on my guitar. And I thought, holy,
yeah,
I'm done. I'm 30. She's 15. I've been busting everything for, you know, since I was seven. And I just knew it was done. I was tired of getting my butt pinched at Tootsie's passing the tip jar.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm. Start getting tired.
That's a Lifetime movie. That's some kind of movie. We got to get that to Hollywood. We got to take this from Nashville to Hollywood. That's unbelievable.
Do you know Taylor Swift now? Does she know this story?
I don't think she realizes, but she loves Gigi's Cupcakes. And so she orders, when she used to live in Nashville, she would order thousands of cupcakes from me every year. Mm-hmm. And we'd put personal TS white chocolate on, and she loves red velvet. And one year for the CRS seminar, country radio seminar, she bought just that one year, 750 individually boxed cupcakes and put them in the hotels. And it was just super cool. I don't think she realizes who I am, but...
Uh-huh. Oh, you know, she's like, eat this cupcake. This lady used to clean my toilets.
Right. So it's interesting how things come around, right?
It is.
Okay, so literally you're looking at this toilet and your dream just went down it because she's on her... Okay, so you realized at that moment, like, she's the one that's going to make it.
Right. I mean, she had her... a lot of money behind her. She's an amazing talent. And she's 15. Mm-hmm. She's writing the best songwriters in Nashville. I mean, it's going to happen for her. And then the next year her album came out and we know the rest is history. So I packed up my cleaning supplies that night in my truck and I drove home and I was just brokenhearted because I was like, what am I going to do with my life? Because my whole life, that's all I wanted was music. And it took me a couple of years to really get myself out of that hole, but I started reading lots of motivational books and the Bible and listening to podcasts and listening to people and listening to what people are doing and how to recreate yourself. And I expanded my cleaning business, and my brother Steve went to New York City and stood in line at a cupcake shop in September 2007. And he called me and he had a red velvet cupcake in Central Park. And he's like, you should open a cupcake shop in Nashville. Now that day I was cleaning another client's bathroom, a toilet at the time, literally.
Who happened to be Dolly Parton. Just kidding.
Who happened to be Leanne Rimes, actually.
Oh gosh.
No, it wasn't her toilet, but I did clean her toilet. But all my epiphanies happened like in
That's kind of amazing.
Funny. So he's like, you should open a cup. And I was like, what? I said, I have to go. I'm cleaning a toilet right now. I got to go. Enjoy your vacation in New York. And I got off the phone. I had my pink cleaning gloves on and I looked in the mirror. I'm like, why not? Why not me? And that's when I decided to just do it. I went to four banks. They laughed in my face. Even though I had great credit, I had a little bit of savings. I'd been in business for almost, 17 years at the time then. Or 15, 16 years, and getting a small business loan for a female was pretty popular at the time, but they said no. So I took out $100,000 in cash advances on my credit cards and went for it.
Oh, wow. Oh my gosh.
Just did it. And
I'm nervous for you at this point.
I'm sweating.
It was a very hard time, and it was very, but to me, fear... and being afraid of something, you shouldn't let that hold you back. You should let it be more of a motivator for you and figure out a way to get around it instead of letting it block you. Mm-hmm. And I think that's what most people have a problem with, is that they don't know how to hurdle over that fear. And so they're stuck in this mediocrity of, they know you have dreams, you know your conscience is saying you need to create, but most people in the world, especially women, it seems like to me, don't know how to hurdle over that fear.
Preach. So, that is the truth. So how did you know that you could do it?
I didn't.
How did you have a pretty good feeling that $100,000, you could make this happen?
And I thought, and I made a business plan, of course, and went and got my store on 19th and Broadway, and the landlord thought I was a crazy person. Mm-hmm. He still does, by the way, but, you know, 100 million cupcakes later, and he's my business partner, it went pretty well. So open my doors with $33 to my name, and all of my cleaning clients, I mean, I had 85 cleaning clients at the time, and they were all friends, because when you're in someone's house, you really develop, not sure. All friends. But there's, well, you know, I worked for doctors, lawyers, business people, people that did stocks, music people, and I would tell them, and they're like, you're crazy. Don't do that. You're crazy. You're going to lose everything. And I said, yeah, but you know what? I'm ready to make a venture, and I'm ready to do something new. So my biggest fear is always been, what if? I don't want to be the person that says, what if? I want to be that person that says, why not? So,
man,
I think my biggest fear is sitting on my porch at 90, if I make it, and going, gosh, why didn't I try? Why? I wasted my life. I'm old and crippled now, and I can't do anything about it. And I have the wisdom now, but I didn't have the courage back then. And I just feel like people need to know that you have to have that courage to just go for it. Step out, get out of the boat, step out in the water, and do it. Because people, they waste their lives being so afraid.
Mm-hmm. It is. Fear is paralyzing.
Yeah.
And I do believe you can do anything. Like, you know, if you set out to do it.
Right, right. You can figure it out.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't know how to do it, there's wise people around you that can give you counsel. It's not, you know, you should at least try.
Pride goes with fear, though, you know. In a way to say, a lot of people can't say, I can't, or teach me,
right?
Help me, show me. Right. Those are very vulnerable, hard things for people to say.
Right. That's very true. And people do not want to fail because they think, well, what would people think of me? Oh my gosh, if I fail and I'm down in the dirt again, you know, what are people going to say? What are people going to say if you just stay in mediocrity and don't do anything with your life? Mm-hmm. They're going to think that you're not brave.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I'd rather be someone like, man, she got her teeth kicked in a lot. She got, you know, sucker punched. She got thrown in the dirt, off the wagon, on the trail, everything. But man, she had courage. Dang, she's brave. She's got some guts.
Yes. So where did the baking come from? Are you a baker? Clearly you're a baker.
I'm a baker, and I love to cook, and I love to entertain. The backstory to that is my great-great-grandmother, in the turn of the century in Oklahoma, opened her first bakery called Bill's Bakery.
Sweet.
So I was taught to cook and bake bread and pies at 5. Like, my family said, get on the stool. Let me show you how to do this. I didn't know I'd be doing it for a living.
Right.
But if you were around it all the time, and I had an aunt that catered, and I had an aunt that cooked and had a bakery, and my mom was an amazing entertainer and baker and cook. And you know, I didn't realize that everyone around my life were Martha Stewarts. They truly are. They're like the epitome of Martha Stewart. I didn't know that one day that would rub off on me and I would actually be doing it. Mm-hmm. But it's interesting how God weaves our lives together, and we are on a path that we think we're totally going to be on. And then he's like, I know you're going to learn lots from here, but you're really going to be on this path. So
isn't that the truth?
Yeah.
Who knew? Yeah. Who knew?
So when you opened your storefront in Nashville, were you just thinking, I'm going to have this one store, or did you have a bigger vision in mind?
I was just wanting one store. I just wanted to open up one store, birth it, be able to bake, eventually maybe not clean. I didn't know. I didn't stop my cleaning business till we had 13 stores open.
Yeah, girl.
A lot of people, you know, think, oh, she just quit cleaning. No, that was my baby business. That was my stability. So I didn't know. I had no idea where it was going to go. I just knew I had to do it because I was being led to do it. And who knew? I mean, who knew it could be what it is, or mm-hmm. what it became?
So how fast did it grow?
So I opened the one store February 21st, 2008. By the end of 2009, we had 12 stores.
Wow.
2010, we had 30 stores. 2011, we had 65 stores. And then my daughter was born. I'm a single mom, did it all on my own, still doing it all on my own.
Yeah, girl.
And sole supporter. And she went on, she's gone on 72 plane flights. I breastfed, you know, signing contracts, swirling, you know, going to business meetings, and she's just right there with me. So another thing that people think that they can't do it is that they can't venture out and do a business with a child. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to say you can. You have to really be good with time management, because you want to be able to be, your first priority should always be your children, and should always be loving that child that you brought into the world. Mm-hmm. That being said, they can enjoy this journey too, and they can see their mommy go to business meetings and go to dinners and swirling and baking and, you know, having a life. She's here today and I'm, you know, doing a podcast, and she's just sitting around and coloring and, you know.
And how learning. Great for her to have a mother who's not afraid.
Right. I want her to grow up to be very tenacious, and I want her to be respectful and kind. I don't want to break her spirit, but I also want her to know that she can do anything she wants to do. Mm-hmm. She has much more opportunities than I ever had. So
right.
Here, who knows what she's going
to
do?
Who knows? Does she like to bake? Do y'all bake together?
She's a little creator. She loves to do her own thing, and she loves to bake and create and mix drinks, soda drinks and lemonade. And yeah, she's a little creator herself.
So it's growing so fast. So now at this point, are you thinking, like, how am I going to manage all this? Are you feeling overwhelmed?
Yeah, just a little. It was like the weight of the world was on my shoulders for 8 years. Yes, it was very, very hard. And I was trying to juggle the franchisees, growing, keeping my store open and afloat because it was the original store, growing a company, creating, growing systems, and being a full-time mom. So there were some major challenges. There still are. Even though I sold the company in 2016, I sold the company, but I still own the original store. I'm still there working and putting my apron on and baking 2 or 3 days a week. And if I'm not in town, I do a lot of public speaking now, and I wrote the book.
Right.
And called The Secret Ingredient. So it's just a busy life. It's fun and happy and a little less pressure, now, which is nice. I get to be with my daughter more.
Right. And not to mention juggling the Today Show and Forbes and, you know, just a few little media tours every now and then, right?
Just a few. I wish there were more. I'm ready to get back on and create.
That's right.
Well, and one of the reasons you do go to all these and speak at these things is because you are the largest cupcake franchise in the world. Is that right?
Yes, we are.
We pioneered the
cupcake franchise. No one had ever done it. So we pioneered it. We figured it out along the ways with literally $33 left to my name when I opened my first store.
What a freaking boss, babe. I mean, it's so inspiring.
Why did you franchise? Like, what drove you to that?
Well, my landlord, his background was in franchising. And normally you do two things. If you want to get your company out there quick and recognition, you either franchise or you have company stores. I had $33, so I didn't have any capital to go and build company stores. So I said, and I had saved in that first 6 months, I had saved $26,000 because I was still cleaning and then doing the cupcake shop. So we took $26,000 and started Gigi's Franchising. And it just went from there. And I didn't even want a franchise. I didn't even want more stores. But people would come in from all over the country, Indianapolis, Dallas, everywhere, and say, we want a store. We want a Gigi's. And I'm like, there's only one. What are you talking about? Flour on my face. And I'm like, what, just here's some cupcakes, but no, I'm not. No, you can't have a store in Indianapolis. And they would beg, please, we want a store. And so then that's when Alan, my landlord, said, you should franchise this concept. So that's how it happened.
And I've been in the store on 19th, and it's a huge counter and some stools, basically. I mean, you were getting people all over the place.
That it's tiny. That is the smallest store in our system. It's 999 square feet. And we pump out daily still between 750 cupcakes and 1,500 cupcakes a day.
So, oh my gosh.
In that little tiny store, I was there yesterday.
Do you still bake? Do you get back there and bake the cupcakes?
Oh yeah, definitely. I was baking some new things yesterday. So it was nice. I was frosting wedding cake. I frosted about 250 wedding cakes for an order yesterday and then baked. And yeah, it was great. I love it. I love that. That's my favorite part, is getting back there and putting an apron on and baking and creating.
I want to get your thoughts on this, though. So you watched your dream of what you thought you always wanted to be and do. You watched that die. And you came up with this new, that you never really, that was always back there. It was always the plan, you know, and it was about timing. Because I don't believe in good luck. I believe in timing, you know.
And hard work.
Yes. The right thing at the right time.
Right.
Is the right thing. The right thing at the wrong time is the wrong thing. And so how do we look and recognize that skill set, that gift set that you thought was going to go one way, but you actually did have a passion for baking and that was back there. But how do you take that, recognize those things, and turn it into something?
I think that you have to be open to creating, and even if a dream dies, like mine died very hard, and it was a very hard 2 years of me feeling like a loser and what am I going to do with my life? But as I was reading all these books about, there's other plans, there's other things out there, there's other things you can create that God created you to do. You don't have to just do one thing. And I think people need to realize that if there's something kind of in their gut that they feel passionate about, that's where you can go to for your source. Like, I love to bake, or I love to do flowers, or wait a minute, maybe I could be a landscape architect, or maybe I could have a nursery, or because you really have to start with your passion and what you really love. And most people don't really know what they love because they're stuck in a job that they really don't like, mm-hmm. but it's stable, it's stability. They don't want to venture out and get out. I always think about a crab in a boiling pot, you know, he's trying to climb out and he just never does. And one might get out, but then the other crabs are always pulling him down. You know, there's that too. There's the negativity around the person who's saying, you can do this, you can do this, you can do it. And if there's no one saying that, how do they think they're going to be able to do it? So it's really just being around good people that have your back, the leaner inners, you know, those people that lean in to you and speak life into your life and go, well, I can do this. Mm-hmm. You know? And some people don't have that. And what I say is, well, God's there. Everyone has it. They mm-hmm. just need to find the source. Mm-hmm. And you can always find sources with books, podcasts, things to make you a better person.
Is that in your book a little bit about the secret ingredient? Is that the premise of why you wrote the book?
It is. It's all about, you know, everyone has different secret ingredients to their life and why they've been successful or why things have happened. And I think my number one is love. Mm-hmm. I think everything stems from love. Love of people, love of our planet, love of things, love, you know, love of creating things. And so if you have love and then you have hard work, I don't know if you can go wrong. It's all about hard work and love and passion. So that's what the book's about.
So you don't give secret ingredient of your cupcakes then, huh?
Sometimes.
You have to read it and see.
You know what the secret ingredient to our cupcake is?
What's that?
Love. Mm-hmm. Because, and I know that sounds so trite, but those little babies, that first baby I baked the first day, the hunk of chunk of banana love, I love that thing. And I just, because it's homemade, it's from my heart. And people are like, oh, bake with love, huh? No, it is, because it's my whole life and my passion and what I desired that came into a cupcake. And then it spread all over the country. Mm-hmm. So people say, oh, that's trite. No, love is the best and first ingredient for anything and any success.
Wow. So when did you write your book?
It came out last December, And I started writing it about 6 months after I had sold the company. And I really wanted to do a cookbook first. Okay. And they said, no, Simon & Schuster said, no, we'd like to do the life story first. And then I have a recipe at the end of every chapter, a life lesson and then a family recipe that goes along with the story.
Mm-hmm. So that's so cute.
I will have to send you all a book.
We would love it. We'd love to give one away.
That and some cupcakes.
Perfect. What a combination.
Hey, what's next for Gigi Butler?
Well, I'm in the recreating stage, and we'll see. I've got a lot of things ahead. I'd love to do a cooking show, and I'm starting to speak a lot more across the country to colleges and businesses and companies. And I don't know. It's kind of a blue sky, but we'll see. I'm in the creation process.
Well, no doubt you'll be successful at whatever it is that's next.
When I birth it.
Right. Yes. Yeah. You got to come back and tell us about it. Okay. For sure.
Well, thank you so much for having me today.
You are so inspiring.
I love your story.
Yeah.
Well, it's always nice to be with like-minded Southern ladies that get it.
Yeah. Well, thank you.
All right. Great talking with you, Gigi.
Thank you so much.
Bye-bye.
Okay, so I have a question for you.
Okay.
This is a debate that's been around for a long time, and you're going to answer it. Give your opinion.
Okay.
Is a muffin the same thing as a cupcake?
No.
Why not?
Because a muffin is a breakfast food, and a cupcake is for times other than breakfast.
But it's the same thing, right? I mean, you can have a blueberry muffin, but you can have a blueberry cupcake.
Yes, but I think it's different. I think your intentions are different. and your intentions are your reality.
Okay. Ooh, there you go.
You like that? What do you think?
I think they're different. Okay. Like a cupcake to me is sweet, frosting. When I think of muffins, I think of like a savory.
Yeah, like a breakfast.
Breakfast. Like bran muffin.
I don't want a scone as a dessert.
No.
I want a scone as a breakfast item.
Exactly.
So don't bring me a scone
for dessert. Like even if it's glazed.
No. After a steak dinner, I'm going to be like, why am I served? Here's another thing. I don't want a donut as a dessert.
Oh, really?
Mm-mm. I want a donut in the morning, and that's it.
Oh, see, I would think of a donut as dessert.
You would?
Yes. Yeah.
Okay, I got another one for you. Is a cheesecake a cake or a pie?
It's a pie, right? Because there's no flour.
But it's a cheesecake.
Things to think about.
Would you rather have a piece of cake or a cupcake?
A cupcake.
Me too.
Yeah, just something smaller. I'm not a big cake person. I'm more of a pie. Like I like chocolate chess pies and like the richness of a pie.
Not me. I'd rather have cake all day.
Oh, yeah.
Flour, 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 cake, flour.
What about the icing? Do you like the icing?
Uh-huh. Buttercream.
Butter. Oh,
strawberry.
Well, of course. Oh,
cream
yeah.
Cream cheese.
Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All the good things.
Yeah. But I will say, and this is legit, and this is not just a plug for Gigi's. Gigi's is the first, like, out-of-the-box, crazy flavored cupcake I ever had.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I had key lime. I remember that was my first, non-strawberry,
like a homemade
cake.
Type yeah. cupcake.
Right. Totally different from any kind of bakery. It was Gigi's, like, key lime.
Yeah.
And I always remember thinking, that's different.
Well,
and
that's
delicious.
Funny you say that because I remember my experience with Gigi's as well because it was the first time that you saw cupcakes with the big tall icing
yes.
and the things in it. And I got a peanut butter, like a Reese's peanut butter. It had a Reese's peanut butter cup on the top in the icing. And I was like, that is amazing.
How do they do that?
How in the world?
Well, they take it out of the wrapper and they smush it in there. Well,
have you ever tried to make cupcakes look like that?
No. I mean, I love cupcakes and my kids love to make cupcakes. But no, I mean, we just do a really simple icing and really simple sprinkles.
I've tried to make cupcakes a few times.
Yeah.
And I think they're going to look really good. And I slather on that icing try to whip it up. It never looks right.
You mean you try to get it tall?
Try
like
to get
Gigi
it tall
does?
Or no, like yes. get the, you know, the good spoon out and like get the little whips.
You got to have like a gun ugly. For that.
I've tried the gun.
Oh,
I've tried it. Tried to make like little flowers on the cupcakes going around.
Okay.
Ugly.
With like an attachment
like a bakery,
and everything.
Frosting attachment.
Oh.
ugly. I'm just not gifted in that way, I guess.
Well, that's when you delegate the details.
That's right. You call Gigi.
Yeah, you do.
Yes.
I mean, over 100 locations all across this. You know, this is a statistic. I don't know if we talked about this in the podcast. Texas is the biggest cupcake eater per capita.
Everything's bigger and better in Texas.
Well, true. I mean, there is more square footage, I guess. But
I wonder why that is.
I don't know. They sell the most cupcakes and eat the most cupcakes in Texas.
That's interesting.
Over 100 million cupcakes a year.
It seems like owning a bakery would be a really hard business.
I would think so, too.
I mean, she's done it, though.
I know.
She's done it well.
And that was on the cutting edge of, like, that's when everything exploded. I mean, wedding industry exploded. Think about all those things that got monogramming exploded. Everything personalized, little, specialty, all that exploded. Because, what'd you say, 2006?
2006,
okay, yeah. So that's right when I got married. And there was no resources or anything before we got married. And then I transitioned into event planning. And, oh my goodness, it was like the world at my fingertips. You could have personalized donuts made, and everybody could have a mini cake and a mini cupcake of
take
all different
home
flavors. That's what I'm
a
saying.
A beautiful cupcake
in a box that was monogrammed. I mean,
yeah,
that stuff didn't exist before 2006. So she hit it right. You know, my whole thing about timing—that's my mantra.
That's right.
Right thing at the wrong time. But she did it, and she cleaned toilets for so long until the cupcake business was established.
Yeah, I did like hearing that she didn't just quit her day job per se.
Because I think that's what scares people about taking risk and doing something outside of the box is they're so scared. They think that we think, let me include myself in that sometimes, we think that we have to be all in, like abandon everything and like, you know, sell our house and live in a van and move to LA and live on a couch. And, I mean, while that is some people's reality, I guess.
Well, like maybe an 18-year-old's reality.
That's what I'm saying. Mm-hmm. If you're in that space and you're only providing for yourself and you have those type of resources and whatever, you can do that. Mm-hmm. But I think we get stuck sometimes thinking, oh, we can't do that, so we can't follow the stream. When she's like, yeah, you can. Clean a few toilets, make that money, and work on this side gig.
Yeah.
Take a $100,000 loan out and put in your first bakery in downtown Nashville.
But how scary is that if you have a whole, say you're supporting your family?
Well, it's totally scary.
You know.
It's totally
people
scary.
Are just paralyzed by that fear of losing everything.
Yes.
And then what do your kids do? You know, they're relying on you to bring in some sort of income.
I think that goes back to the question that we ask her, though. How did you know? And she's like, I just knew. I just knew. And maybe that's part of it. If something is inside of you and you figure out those gifts, right? Mm-hmm. And she thought she was going to be a songwriter.
Yeah.
I mean, cleaning company, moved to Nashville from Oklahoma, tried to be a songwriter. I mean, get in line. But then to watch that dream die and go, okay, what next now?
Yeah. And then also knowing when to say goodbye to that dream.
That's what I'm saying. Of course, I guess Taylor Swift singing on the bed might be a little motivation.
She's got teardrops on her guitar and Gigi's got teardrops on her toilet bowl cleaner.
Exactly. Ugh. So, I don't know. I just think it's very intuitive and self-aware to recognize, to be able to look at yourself and go, okay, what am I passionate about? Mm-hmm. What makes sense to me? What are the gifts that God's given me? What am I good at innately? And then how can I use those things and put them into play in a way that's going to, whatever that is, whether that's going to be beneficial to your kid's school, or your area of service, you want to be lucrative and make money out of it, like however you want to see that.
Yeah.
It's so important to figure those things out about yourself, you know? Mm-hmm. Have you done Enneagram or taken any of those tests or anything?
I don't even remember what mine was though, but yeah.
We need to do a podcast on that sometime because that would be interesting.
Very interesting.
But remember the Myers-Briggs was real big when we were, you know, are you a sanguine or introvert?
Introvert.
You know, I always tested off the charts, like sanguine, craziness, whatever.
But I mean, even like, you know, listening to this interview and she was talking about, you know, finding her things she was good at and following that. Even that, Courtney, it made me think of the two of us.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, I know our podcast is not Gigi's Cupcakes. We're not going to make $48 million. I mean, maybe we will.
Yet.
But, I mean, just finding something that makes us happy, that's rewarding to us, and doing it and becoming passionate about that and putting ourselves out there.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think it's kind of the same thing.
Well, it's funny because I'm more emotional than you.
Oh, definitely.
And so, And so, y'all, when we finished this podcast, Sarah was keyed up. I mean, I'm keyed up after almost every podcast. I'm like trying to like change something or volunteer somewhere, so I'm like teary-eyed. But Sarah, you had a visceral response to this, and you were like, I kept saying the whole time, like, I feel like this is me. I feel like this is our story. So do you feel that way, like about reinventing yourself or finding like a new side of you? Like what resonated with you?
Well, I think just the fact that you're always changing and that you always need to be, I mean, maybe it's just my personality. Like I want to do something, I'm going to do it and I go after it. Mm-hmm. I just say it out loud and I'm going to make it happen. Mm-hmm. And I was kind of at a place where I'm thinking like, I love being a mother. I'm not saying I don't want to be a mother or that sort of thing, but I was just needing something more out of my life. And like, I love taking care of them. They're getting older. Yes, I have a 2-year-old, but holy smokes, that's a lot.
Oh yeah.
You know, and I needed to do something for myself. It was time. Yeah. I've been home with my children for 10 years. Mm-hmm. That's a long time.
Yeah.
And for somebody who was so independent and loved doing their own things and always putting themselves out there, and then to go from that to being at home with the babies, it's a huge change. And it was just time. It was time for me to find something else for me. And I love doing radio. I've done a lot of interviews, and that's kind of what started sparking that inside me, is that it's time for me to do something for me.
Right.
And I love doing this. I'm going to follow what I'm passionate about.
Do you feel like that because you won The Bachelor, right, and you have this like this public role, do you feel like that was an identity for you for a long time?
Oh, it still is.
Okay.
I mean, still people today still see me and they're like, oh, you're the girl from The Bachelor, the sweet kindergarten teacher. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, hold up. Yep, that was me, but I was never the sweet kindergarten teacher.
Yeah, that's how they played you.
Yeah, and do you know that after the show, after I did it, I would be out at a bar drinking, but let's say I'm having a glass of wine.
You're an adult. You can go to a bar.
People could not believe that I was drinking alcohol.
Yeah.
And I'm like, what do you mean? I'm like, well, you were the sweet kindergarten teacher. We just didn't think you drank alcohol. I'm like, well, yeah, cheers. Mm-hmm. You know, yeah, I do. Right. You're a kindergarten teacher. You're not supposed to be here.
Right.
Just that whole thing. I'm like, that's not me.
Right. Mm-hmm. And so you have this identity. And so you probably are in this place where you're like, because this podcast is really the first thing that you've done outside of that. I mean, you did real estate for a little bit, but
this is
putting yourself out there and being public again,
right?
Outside of your speaking engagements and things like that. Mm-hmm. I mean, you are recreating yourself.
Yeah. And for me, this was more about allowing my girls to see me do something and like setting a goal. And I want them to see me do that. Right. I want them to see me say, I'm going to do something. I'm going to work hard at it. I'm going to make it happen.
Right.
And it may not make $48 million in a franchise, something that I'm proud of and that I want hopefully my girls are proud of.
Right.
And I think that's what it's all about.
But so if anybody out there wants to do, say it Northern, say it Western.
We'll franchise that.
Say it Eastern. Say it Middle Eastern. Say it Kurdish.
Yes.
Say it Parisian. We are open to franchising, but I want you to know that name is trademark and don't even come for it.
Don't come after it. Yeah. Here come our millions, girl.
So anyway, no, I did. You had a very cerebral, visceral response to that. So yes. I loved seeing that.
Well, and I love women's stories like this.
Me
like
too.
People that are, she's scrubbing toilets and then the next minute she is following her dream and, you know, risking it all, literally.
And having a baby and being a single
parent.
And having
being a single mom, yes.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Boss babe.
Boss babe.
For sure.
And if she can do it, we can all do it.
That is exactly right. Put that fear behind you, baby.
That's right.
Seize the day.
What is it? The greater the risk, the greater the reward?
100%.
Mm-hmm.
Like Gigi says, nothing's made without love and hard work. Wasn't that awesome?
It was so good.
I know.
We do hope that this has been an inspiring and encouraging podcast for all of our listeners.
Yeah, and we celebrate one of the great stories of the South with Gigi Butler and her amazing success. Thanks for saying it Southern with us today.
Bye.